Welcome to another edition of the Health First Show. I'm your host, Dave Fuller, and today we're going to be talking about psychological nutrition with Dr. Shoba and Dr. Linda Weinberger. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking with Dr. Gregory Martin about his book, Education for Knees. But before we do that, here's Alan with the health news.
The so-called paleo diet may help older women lose weight and lower their future risk of diabetes and heart disease, a new study has found. Women experienced these benefits by sticking to the guidelines of the paleo diet, even though they were not required to restrict their calorie intake, the researchers said. The study results indicate that the paleo diet could prove an effective means of battling the obesity epidemic, said lead study author Carolyn Blomqvist, a doctoral student at Umeå University in Sweden. The findings were scheduled for presentation at the recent annual meeting of the Endocrine Society in Boston. The data and conclusions should be viewed as preliminary until published in a peer-reviewed journal. In a prepared statement, Blomqvist said, obesity-related disorders have reached pandemic proportions with significant economic burden on a global scale. It is of vital interest to find effective methods to improve metabolic balance. Drinking coffee may cut your risk of colon cancer by as much as 50%, a new study suggests. The more you drink, the more you reduce your risk, and it makes no difference whether the coffee is regular or decaf, researchers said. Senior researcher Dr. Gad Rennert, director of the Clalit National Israeli Cancer Control Center in Haifa, said the protective effect is not caffeine per se, but probably a lot of other antioxidant ingredients in the coffee that are released in the roasting process. These findings can't prove that coffee reduces the risk of colon cancer, only that coffee is associated with a reduced risk, Rennert said. However, the association appears strong, he added. For the study, Rennert's team, which included researchers at the University of Southern California's Norris Comprehensive Cancer Center, collected data on more than 5,100 men and women in northern Israel who were diagnosed with colon cancer. These patients were compared with more than 4,000 men and women with no history of colon cancer. The report was published April 1st in the journal Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention. There seems to be a link between poor oral health and age-related mental decline, researchers say. However, the researchers emphasize there is not enough evidence to prove a direct link between oral health and thinking or cognitive abilities. In a new report, investigators reviewed studies on oral health and cognition published between 1993 and 2013. Some of the studies found that oral health indicators, such as the number of teeth, the number of cavities, and the presence of gum disease, was associated with a higher risk of mental decline or dementia, while other studies did not find any association. The study authors also noted that some of the findings based on the number of teeth or cavities were conflicting. The new review was published in the April 1st issue of the Journal of the American Geriatric Society. Mindfulness training can trigger brain changes that help veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder manage disturbing memories and thoughts, according to a new study of war veterans. The goal of mindfulness training is to help people develop in-the-moment attention and awareness. This study included 23 U.S. veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars who all received some form of group therapy. After 4 months of weekly sessions, many had reductions in their PTSD symptoms. However, some of the participants received mindfulness training, and only those veterans showed brain activity changes that could be detected on functional MRI brain scans. Before mindfulness training, when the veterans with PTSD were resting quietly, they had extra activities in brain regions involved in responding to threats or outside problems, the study authors said. After mindfulness training, the veterans developed stronger connections between two other brain networks, one involved in inner, sometimes wandering thoughts, and another involved in shifting and directing attention. The study was published in the journal Depression and Anxiety on April 1st.
Thanks for that, Alan. Well, our first guests, Dr. Shoba Srinivasan and Dr. Linda Weinberger, are clinical psychologists who have written a book called Psychological Nutrition. Dr. Linda and Dr. Shoba, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about your backgrounds and why you got interested in writing this book in the first place.
Okay. Well, first of all, again, thanks for having us on. We're excited about talking about this book and actually even this concept. Linda and I both have PhDs in clinical psychology. Mine is from UCLA. I've trained postdoctorally as a forensic psychologist and been a clinical professor at the Keck School of Medicine of USC for almost 30 years, and I've worked clinically with military veterans for over 25 years dealing with issues related to trauma and psychological distress, and I also work as a forensic psychologist doing consulting kind of work to state courts and law enforcement and attorneys in civil litigation. And I'm Linda, and my PhD is from the University of Houston. I've also been a professor at the Keck School of Medicine of USC, and I am a chief psychologist for the forensic postdoctoral program here in our department, and I've worked at both for more than 35 years. My areas of expertise are clinical and forensic psychology, and I teach seminars related to issues of mental health and law. I also work as a consultant to various professional groups in medicine, mental health, law, education, social service, and law enforcement. Together, Shoba and I have published extensively in peer-reviewed professional journals on a wide range of topics, including approaches dealing with combat trauma and developing resilience.
So this book is a little bit, you know, it's interesting because the title of the book is a little misleading to me because I thought, you know, we're talking about nutrition and the relationship with psychology or you know, the psychological influence that nutrition might have on a body. But it's a little bit different than that. Can you explain your book for listeners that don't have a copy of it?
You are right, Dave. Psychological nutrition isn't about food at all. It's all about emotions. And the way we came to it is I was in a grocery store looking at an entree and trying to figure out, well, should I get this? Should I not? And realized that the picture on it looked pretty appealing, but I flipped it over to the nutritional content and looked to see, well, how many calories, high fat, low fat. And then I thought, well, how come we don't do this kind of thing for emotional health? So that was how the idea of psychological nutrition was born. And Linda and I thought, you know, just like with food, we're going to look at psychological reactions from their nutritional perspective. So in our book, emotions are ingredients that you feed yourself. Mm-hmm. And relationships are the products. And just like with food, some are nutritious, others aren't. And there are junk emotions, just like junk food. And we believe that junk emotions just don't bring out your best.
So tell us about, so in the book, you know, for people that don't, you know, that don't understand what the book itself is in the sense, tell us about the different products that we're talking about. You know, then you look at the ingredients. But what are some of the areas that you cover in this book?
Well, you know, for example, Shoba had just mentioned junk emotions, and they're not good for you. Well, junk emotions are just like junk food. If you have too many feelings, emotional reactions, such as anger or resentment or worry, that's going to lead to malnourishment. Just like if you eat too much junk food, that's going to lead to a food malnourishment. We're concerned with psychological nourishment and psychological malnourishment. If you consume too many products, and we're going to explain that a little later, then you're going to experience negative or high-fat emotions, and it's going to propel you into psychological starvation. Being in a state of psychological starvation is now also going to prevent you from obtaining any positive emotions or low-fat emotions because there's no room. You've been consumed. You've been taken over by this negativity. Because we tend not to think of our emotions in this way, we don't look at them. We don't assess them. Is this good for me? Is this not good for me? We unthinkingly then consume a diet that is so high in negative emotions, high fat, that we really can't function. We looked at women, and we see that women are juggling so much. They're working, and they've got their families. Oftentimes, they're sandwiched between providing care for their children or their parents. Then they have other family and professional obligations. And before you know it, they're starting to run on empty. Because why? They're psychologically malnourished. So what do you do? Well, Shoba and I decided that just like products have labels, when you look at that box and you look at its nutritional content and you decide, should I consume this, should I not? We want people to look at the nutritional content of our interactions, our relationships and situations, and look at these kinds of areas as a psychological nutritional label. In this way, you're going to know before you enter into the situation whether it's a high-fat or has a low-fat emotional content.
I really like the concept, and I'm wondering, you know, as North Americans are becoming more obese because, you know, we're getting on these, you know, these diets that are loaded with sugar, and, you know, I don't really want to go there too much, but I'm wondering if part of that problem with the psychological nutrition is a similar problem that's happening with, you know, obesity, in the sense that we become addicted to certain things because, you know, our parents were eating those foods because our parents were, you know, that's what they grew up on. And now we're growing up on, except for we're going even more extreme because it's being pushed on us. Is that happening in from a psychological aspect as it is in nutrition?
I think it is. We have a chapter in our book called The Distress Belly, and it sort of tangentially ties into what you were saying, Dave. This whole idea that there may be an impact between what we consume and our moods. You were talking about how, you know, we might have diets because we're influenced by culture or parents or so forth, mm-hmm. and maybe some of those diets aren't good for you and they lead to obesity and so forth. Another way of looking at it is from the emotional point, that emotional starvation, psychological starvation might lead you to eating those foods that then augment obesity. There's this whole area related to the gut brain, you know, that has been emerging, this idea that the whole gastrointestinal lining and system, you know, has all of these receptors that then send messages to the brain and mood. And we know, like with the brain, that whole hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis is really key to how we metabolize food. So if you're stressed out, this HPA throws out cortisol. Cortisol is like this evolutionary thing that we have to keep us from physical starvation. So what's the first thing that happens? It throws out the cortisol, and you get food turned into fat, mainly around the belly. And that's a reaction to stress. Well, what are some things that cause stress? All these negative interactions that you have with people cause stress, cause anger, they cause upset, they cause depression. That then is going to get that HPA triggered, and then you can, you know, physically have a reaction, a physical belly. Our book, you know, is more concerned with the psychological aspects of it. How do you control your emotional reactions? How do you go away from just having knee-jerk negative emotions? How do you end up moving away from kind of a milieu of guilt, anger, resentment, pessimism? And how do you move towards being more energized? And again, more energized you are, the more active you're going to be. And that, in turn, is going to have a profound impact on the development of obesity.
We're talking with Dr. Linda and Dr. Shoba. They are the authors of Psychological Nutrition. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be finding out more about, you know, the things, the effects of psychology on your health.